Hi, this is Paul Marks, host and producer of Multifamily Matters. Today we're going to air the best of Multifamily Matters. It's a very educational and informative episode, so listen and enjoy the best of Multifamily Matters.
Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Welcome and thank you for tuning into Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks, and we have a great show with a wonderful guest who is an expert on today's topic. And today we are discussing the topic of fair housing, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Joining me by phone from Dallas is Ann Sadowski, a multifamily industry veteran and nationally sought out educator, trainer, and speaker. Welcome, Ann.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be part of your show.
Now, when we were talking and I told you the name of the topic, you said that although you thought that was a good name, you have another phrase that you use when you're talking about this. Why don't you share that?
I have a couple of favorite titles. The first one is Pot, Pit Bulls, Parking, and Perps, the pitfalls of fair housing.
I know that our listeners who have to deal with the residents on site understand that very well.
They certainly do.
So let's talk a little bit about fair housing. Give me a little background on. Whenever I talk to someone in the industry and the phrase fair housing comes up, you know, I always see some apprehension. I see a little anxiety. What's the deal with it?
Well, it's pretty well deserved. Mm-hmm. It is complicated. HUD hasn't made totally clear some of the things that we deal with from their perspective. Residents have gotten very savvy and come in and say, I'm going to file a complaint against you, and if you don't let me do this, I'm going to do that. And they think they know the laws, and they come in saying, you have to let me have this or have to let me do that. So it is a complicated part of our world.
Let's kind of take your phrase of pot, pit bulls, and so forth. Let's kind of go through each one of those. What does that mean?
The questions I get the most usually are about marijuana, service and ESA, service and emotional support animals. I get a lot of questions about handicap parking and how can we do this and can they have more than one, et cetera, et cetera. And then PERPs, of course, in 2016, we had three new rulings, and one of them was criminal background checks. Mm-hmm. And please, I don't want to offend anyone, but I get a lot of kind of dumb questions that I say to people, use your brain.
Yeah.
Common sense comes to play here. Think about what you're asking me. You know, and I'll just give you a quick example. I got a call from a gal in Florida. We're marketing a new property, and only one building has an elevator, and my boss wants me to advertise elevator building perfect for senior citizens. And she said, I have anxiety about that. And I said, and you should, because why wouldn't it be perfect for a mom with the dry cleaning, the groceries, and a child in a stroller?
Right.
So, and it's, you know, just one gal called and said, my boss wants us to stop using black ink in the office because they're afraid we'll get shopped or tested and they'll think that we're coding black people. And I'm just sitting there going like, okay, number one, what color ink are you going to use? If you use brown, Hispanic, if you use red, American Indian, if you use yellow, Asian, mm-hmm. and if you use blue, you're interviewing Martians and Smurfs. So I don't, I want to just tell you that if you only use black ink for only black people, you have a problem.
Right.
If you're using it for everybody, that doesn't make sense.
So when you mentioned the ruling in 2016, just for the edification of our listeners, the rulings come from who?
HUD.
And so how often normally do these rulings change? Are they amended? Is it something that happens frequently?
It is irregular. In 2016, there were three. I'm hearing a little bit with the current administration, and this is not a political statement. This is a fact. With the current administration, they seem to be trying to pull back a little bit on the VAWA, for example, the Violence Against Women Act, and it's in Congress right now. We're waiting to see what they do with that. It could change again. Back in 2004, they told us that anyone could sign a document stating that the resident or the prospective resident had a disability. And we're all going, well, that doesn't make any sense. Their mother, their cousin, their next-door neighbor, the trash man. Because what do they know about the disability? And it took all the way up to 2013 for HUD to give us the permission to use the word health care, health services, medical provider. All the way from 2004 to 2013, we fumbled with that, and now we have a little bit clearer ruling.
And so in 2016, you mentioned that there were three rulings that came down.
That is correct.
Tell us a little bit about each one.
All right. The first one was VAWA, VAWA, Violence Against Women Act, and I could go into a long dissertation on that, but let me just tell you what all of them are. The second one that I'll talk about is LEP, Limited English Proficiency. And basically, we've been told that we have the responsibility for communication with people who do not speak English, which is a little bit challenging because you can't have every person in your office cannot speak every language on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. So we're still juggling that one. And then the last one that I'll talk about is criminal background checks and what we can and can't do with that. And they threw around a lot of heavy-duty words about that it was disparate impact, the way we were doing it. And so I can give you a full-fledged on everything we're talking about when you're ready to hear it.
Okay. Well, let's take the first one, the Violence Against Women Act, and tell us, you know, prior to that ruling, what was the situation within the industry, and after that ruling, what's changed?
Well, you know, sadly, enough has not changed. But so here's basically how it started. Our industry, our property managers, were getting tired of people of let's just say, I'm going to say, a woman living in an apartment, perhaps with children, who has a perpetrator like an ex-spouse or whatever, who comes and beats on the door and is violent and raging and threatening, and the neighbors got tired of it, and the neighbors always get tired of that. It's understandable. And let me just say to the gentlemen who are on board, I realize that women can be violent too, but this is an act to protect women. The property management started just after she dialed 911, which of course she would do, they got tired of that, and so they were just like evicting people for dialing 911 so much. And it became very obvious that the last thing a person who's being stalked, persecuted, beating down the doors, the last thing that person needs, especially with children, is to be put on the street. So that was a lot of it. And so now we do everything that we can to work with that person, perhaps transfer them to another apartment where the perpetrator doesn't know where they are. I'm reminding people to be very, very careful when you're Texas lease, and all over the United States, I'm pretty sure most leases ask for permission to photograph people who live on the property. So like at parties and events and swim meets and all that kind of stuff. And I'm encouraging people still today, do not photograph the faces of the children on the property. That's a real invasion of privacy, and sometimes people see it on Facebook and they go, aha, now I know where my grandchildren are, or aha, now I know where my ex-wife and my children live. So the adults give permission, but that doesn't give permission for the children to be photographed. So another part of VAWA and what really has been the biggest issue is that in some geographic areas, and probably all over the United States, but some, we see more complaints filed of male property owners and operators who are, especially in affordable housing, who are saying to women, I won't accept your voucher if you don't give me sex. And it's a true story, and I'm not making. I just saw another case last week up in New York, where the owner of several properties had been doing it on all. We won't fulfill your service request. You won't get any maintenance unless you have sex with me, and the punishment was pretty steep. They didn't take the properties away from him. They made him get outside management. He is no longer allowed to manage his own properties or even to set foot on his own properties. And of course had to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines, and he's barred from his own community. So it's hard to believe in almost 2020 that's still happening, but it is still happening. And then one other little segment on that is being careful about sexual harassment on your properties. We get some really kind of bizarre things that happen. The service techs flirting with a resident. A complaint was filed not long ago. One of my clients, who the service tech said to a woman, "Your teenage daughter is so beautiful. You're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen." And she took offense to that, which in my case at this age, come on, give me a compliment, right? But not everybody feels that way. And so things like, the service tech gets a complaint filed because the resident said she hugged him and he patted her on the bottom. And he says, "This woman hugs me every time I see her. I walk in her apartment to do maintenance. She hugs me. She sees me on the ground. She gives me a hug. She gives me a hug, and she pats me on the back. And I guess I was pat, and then I got a little too low." And a complaint was filed. So we live in a world where it's kind of keep your hugs to yourself unless you're family or intimately friends with somebody. And it's just kind of a scary world.
All right. Well, we got much more to talk about on this topic. We do have to take a short break. We're going to be back right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Well, we're back, and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing the topic of fair housing, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me by phone from Dallas, Texas, is Ann Sadowski, a multifamily industry veteran and nationally sought-out educator, trainer, and speaker. And Ann, in the first segment, we were talking about the VAWA Act, or the VAWA part of the rulings that came down in 2016. Also, one of the other ones that you kind of mentioned in the first segment is the criminal background. Let's talk a little bit about that. What's changed?
Okay, so, obviously rulings and laws come down because we learn through experience. When I started in this industry, the lease was one page on one letter-sized piece of paper. Now people sign their lives away on all the documents and all the, because we learn the hard way. But people do things, and we say, okay, we better write a policy about that. So here's basically what happened with criminal backgrounds. The industry for years, we were taking into consideration just if they had been arrested. That is no longer allowed. They have to have been convicted for us to choose whether they can live on the property or not. So here are the basic facts. 80% of the people who are incarcerated in America today, 80% are black or Hispanic. So that's where the accusation comes in that it could be disparate impact, that if we discriminate against 80% of the people who get out of prison, that 80% are protected classes by race, color, national origin perspective. So it's been made very clear to, and the different states are juggling it and trying to do different things. And basically, the ruling is, we've tried to boil it down to get as simplified as much as we can. Number one, whoever is running your credit checks, your resident histories, your criminal backgrounds, if they have a business where they are selling to our industry, we will do your background checks for you. They know what they're supposed to do and what they're not supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So basically, with criminal background is, and some of the states are fighting this, and some are trying to add to it, so we're still tossing this ball in the air. If within the last 7 years they have committed a felony and they get out, and if it was what I would say a minor felony, I mean, there's no minor felonies, but if ever they have murdered someone or committed a sexual offense, crime, and probably if they've done things like setting fires, arson, and then, of course, HUD wants to come along and say, yeah, but that might be a mental, you know, geez. So, but there are certain groups that we would never have to lease to, based on the felony. And then there are some that we say within the last 7 years, if that much time has gone by and they haven't committed another crime, then we take them into consideration. So one of the things that I've encouraged everybody to do, and I've noticed that all the agencies that are running the checks and everything, is the first thing you want to do, especially if you're running these yourselves, your properties, you're running them yourselves, is first run their resident history and their economic status. You know, can they afford the apartment and what kind of renter have they been? And that might keep you from ever having even get to the criminal mm-hmm. part. And it's sad but true, because a lot of people who've been in prison end up with poor credit and not being able to find a place to live. And I suggest always that we be somewhat empathetic to that. I have a grandson who's been in prison, and when he got out, he still owed traffic fines in another state. We couldn't get him a driver's license. He can't find a place that nobody wants to rent to him. It's hard for them to find a job. So you can understand why the feds are trying to give some support here. But we still have rights to examine people's criminal backgrounds. That basically is it in a nutshell.
So what percentage of the companies out there, the management companies out there, do you think are trying to do the background checks themselves versus hiring someone who are pros at it?
I would say that there's no question, all of the big companies, the Lincolns, the Gray Star, all the big companies, the Bizzutos, all the big companies certainly are going to be using an agency. It doesn't cost a lot. You know, I can't name all of them, and I don't want to start.
Sure.
I don't know who your sponsors are, so I'm not going to get into that. But there are some really good ones, and they know what they're doing, and they run it for you. My concern is, and all of the, if anyone listening is, let's say, a small owner, the small owners are the ones who are getting sued the most. The big companies have got it all together. Man, they're doing the training. They're paying for someone else to do the criminal background. They're paying. The smaller owners who are trying to do everything themselves are the ones who are making the mistakes, and therefore the a lot of the cases are coming against them.
Yeah, and it seems like a small insurance policy as far as the getting someone professional who does that every day, and that's their job to do that. Let's talk a little bit about LEP, the Limited English Proficiency portion of that 2016.
Okay, so the ruling basically says that we, as an industry, as an owner, as a management company, as a property manager, have the responsibility for communication with people who do not speak English. Now, that sounds well and good, and I'll give you an example. I'm in Texas. You're in Texas. Our state lease provided by our State Apartment Association comes in Spanish as well as in English, as does our fair housing poster. And that is because what we used to refer to as our second language is pretty much our first language in the state of Texas now. And so we try to accommodate all of our, if you happen to be a person looking for a job in our industry and you are bilingual and you speak Spanish, you're a premium find, because we want people to be able to communicate. The challenge is people come here from Italy and France and China and Japan, and we can't speak all of those languages. And if we were required to put all of our documents in those languages, we could pretty much paper the building. So we can't comply that way. So what we're being told is that you, and Google is your friend and Amazon is your friend. If you want more information on how to communicate with people whose English is not their first language, there are all kinds of translators. There are translations on your computers. Just know that basically you are responsible for that. And it's frustrating. And one of my favorite stories is a lady from another country came into the leasing office, the rental office, and said, "My pig broke." And the staff said, "We don't understand. Tell us again. My pig broke." And they said, "I'm sorry, we don't understand." She said, so she goes back and gets her child, who's in elementary school and has learned English. And he said, "Where we put the garbage in the sink broke." So it was the garbage disposer. In their country, they give the garbage to the pigs.
Oh.
So my pig broke. So, you know, so great, the kids are learning English. The only thing I'll advise everybody about that is you can't take the child's translation in any kind of legal matters, like the lease, when they're explaining it to their parents or whatever. You don't know, because you don't speak the language, you don't know what child is actually saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a challenge. But it's not too big a hill for us to climb. We've had greater challenges than this one. So, and I mentioned it, I'm going to say it again. If you want to know what the fair housing laws about LEP, about VAWA, about criminal backgrounds are in your state, in your area, then you need to go to Google and go put in criminal background check, state of Texas. And there's no excuse not to know the laws. No excuse.
All right.
I mean, I'm glad that they need me, but they also need Mr. Google as their friend.
All right. Well, before we take a break, I do want to remind our listeners, if you want to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. We're going to take a break now. We're going to be back with our third segment of this great topic of the fair housing, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll be back after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts, offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing the topic of fair housing, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone from Dallas, Texas, is Ann Sadowski. a multifamily industry veteran and nationally sought-out educator, trainer, and speaker. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. Rasa Floors, the professional flooring advisor specializing in make-ready replacement flooring for the multifamily industry throughout Texas and Oklahoma. WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management. And Ted W. Allen and Associates, specializing in multifamily habitational insurance since 1967. And getting back onto the topic of the fair housing, one of the big things that you mentioned that where you get a tremendous number of questions is when it comes to the ESA animals. Let's talk a little bit about that. First, explain what that means.
All right. Let's talk about three quick categories about animals. There are pets, and every property has the right to allow pets or not. Every property has the right to do breed restrictions for pets. They have the right to do, if they want to do weight restrictions, I will remind them when they do that small dogs are more yappy, nippy, barky than sometimes the big dogs are, but weight restrictions would be allowed. Those are pet related. You can have all these pet policies and pet rules, okay? Sometimes your city says no bulldogs in apartment communities or no bulldogs in the city, any kind of bulldog. So that would be a pit bull. Who is the most maligned of all of the dogs? Great Danes, German Shepherds, the bigger animals, sometimes they get left out. So those are pets. The next category is a true service animal, which means that the animal is canine, and in some circumstances, a miniature horse, not a pony, a miniature horse that will never get any bigger. And that's rare, but that is often for people who are visually impaired, blind people, and I'll tell you why they do that anyway. So that category is the service animal actually has to be trained and actually provide a service to the person with a disability. And even if you're a no-pet community, you have to allow people with a service animal. And you're not allowed to have breed restrictions for service animals. Many people have pit bull service animals. Most of them, I would say, are labs, maybe German Shepherds. But they have to be trained, and they do have to provide a service. And if you have, if the disability is not visible, or you have any doubt, or you cannot understand how the service animal aids the person, you have the right to get documentation from a knowledgeable third party, and I will address that in a minute, that it is, in fact, a service animal and that the person does, in fact, have a disability as described by HUD. So what is the description of a disability by HUD? It is any physical or mental impairment which substantially limits one or more major life activities. So what are major life activities? Walking, talking, seeing, hearing, breathing, climbing the stairs. Those are major life activities. Being able to navigate. Sometimes it might even be not being able to get out of their home. So that's a service animal. It is described by the America Disabilities Act, ADA, which does not apply to housing other than the public areas. So along came, HUD and our descriptions, and we get, this is the number one category that I get questions on, because owners, and again, small owners who are not staying educated say, I'm not letting a pit bull live on my property. And then we get this, my city doesn't allow pit bulls, which I mentioned earlier. My insurance company will not cover us for pit bulls. And I noticed that you have an insurance sponsor, and I hope that this is not going
no,
to
not,
not rock any boats, but I will just say to you, if your insurance, property insurance company says, we will not cover pit bull or service animal attacks on people, I'm terribly sorry, but you need a different insurance company, because that's HUD forces us to allow these animals. So, and then let me describe the third category, which are emotional support animals, which HUD tends to pretty much in the same category as service animals regarding our treatment and allowing them, et cetera, et cetera. But here's the difference. They are not trained, and they serve the person with a disability, especially with emotional or mental disabilities, as a comfort creature. So they have a cat, they have a duck. We've seen many cases, one about ducks. They have a little dog. They have that sleeps on the pillow with them. They have agoraphobia. They can't go outside their apartment without their comfort animal. I've seen a picture of a lady who has a rat on her shoulder, and it goes everywhere she goes. And have a great knowledge of a man who has seizures, and he's had them most of his life. And his family heard about getting an African gray parrot because they're very, very smart, and it's become very sensitive to him. And when he's about to have a seizure, the parrot says, sit down. Therefore, he doesn't fall forward flat on his face and break his nose for the 10th time. So it can be many different kinds of animals, but this, an actual service animal, canine miniature horse. Okay, and real quickly, why a person would choose a miniature horse. Cost about $20,000 to actually train a service animal. And a canine, the size that we typically use as a service animal, probably lives an average of 12 years, the size of the dog. As you know, the bigger dogs don't last as long as the small dogs. A miniature horse can live 30 years. So if you're going to spend the money, $20,000 or more, for a trained, you know, that, so I'm not seeing a lot of requests for miniature horses or hearing stories of it in our industry, but the ADA certainly sees it for public areas, people who use a miniature horse versus a dog.
So let me ask you a question just to make sure I'm understanding correctly. You'd mentioned that a community has the right to restrict the breed for pets, but when it comes to a service animal, that's overridden. So you can say for pets, we do not allow the pit bull, for example. But if for a service animal, we have to allow
that is
a
correct.
Pit bull if someone chooses
that is
it.
Correct.
Yeah.
And even if you're – and people ask, well, what if my city says no pit bulls in our city? And I say, put your city in one hand and the federal government in the other. And which one do you think weighs the most?
Yeah.
So if it really went to court, I guarantee you – The feds, HUD, would win that case over a city saying no pit bulls. And then other things that are important real quickly about the animals. With the service and the ESAs, you do have to scoop the poop. The resident has to scoop the poop. If they can't scoop it, they need to hire someone to scoop it. So you have a person in a wheelchair who can't bend over and scoop the poop when they go take their dog out, then they need to hire somebody or have somebody scoop the poop. And now we have all these great services that test the poop to know whose poop it is. And don't we live in a fun world?
Yeah.
I tell everybody, when you've been in this industry 2 years or more, you have equivalent to a degree in psychology and darn near a law degree.
So,
but anyway, real quickly back to, let me just mention, that you can require some of the same things that you have in your pet policies, that the animal has to be on a leash when it is outside the apartment, and with one exception, and that is if the person does have seizures and might, you know, if they have the dog tied to them with a leash or a strap, the animal couldn't run and get help if they passed out, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a seizure management dog does. It runs and barks and barks and barks till it gets attention and leads people to the person who had a seizure.
So is a ESA, a emotional service animal, does it fall under the purview in most leases for a pet deposit?
No. You are not allowed to charge pet deposits for service animals or emotional support animals, which now has led us to the cheaters have arrived, and they have the little Daisy, their little poodle, and they pay $19 for a vest on the internet and bring it in and say it's their service animal or their emotional support animal to avoid paying a pet deposit and to avoid paying pet rent. And so now we're all watching this, and many, something like 15 states, and Illinois just added on, maybe 19 now, have come up with state laws. We will fine you for lying about your animals. You probably know they can go online and for anywhere between $39 and $199 buy a document that is absolutely fake. There is no such thing as an American animal registry. There's no such thing. And people are so proud of themselves they come walking in with those. And we don't have to accept those. If so, here's the deal. When they bring that in with a gold stamp on it, and it has the dog's name and their name, and they bought it there in Florida, and they bought it from somebody in Oregon who's never met them, never examined them, doesn't really know they have a disability, who thinks they can get by with asking them three questions and then sending them a certificate for $179, which is it's fake. So I always say, when they bring it in, you say, thank you for bringing this in. I'm happy to make a copy of it and get it back to you. However, it is our company policy to require documentation from a health services medical provider establishing that you do, in fact, have a disability when you can't see the disability or you have questioned that it doesn't really exist.
Okay. All right.
So, quick example. Stevie Wonder comes in the dark glasses and the white cane, and you know it's Stevie Wonder. You wouldn't ask him any questions if he had a service animal.
Right.
I walk in, you would need to ask me if that was really a service animal. You wouldn't put it that way. Mm-hmm. You would say it's our company policy and we require documentation.
Okay. All right. Well, we've run out of time in our third segment. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with our fourth and final segment of this episode after this short break. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing the topic of fair housing, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I am Paul Marks, and joining me by phone from Dallas, Texas, is Ann Sadowski, a multifamily industry veteran and nationally sought-out educator, trainer, and speaker. And before we went to the break, we were talking about the ESA animals, service animals and ESA animals and pets and the pet policies. I hear a lot of chatter. You kind of touched on this and told a couple of stories, but I hear a lot of chatter. And it's must be very timely because you're getting a lot of questions about it, as you indicated, people are bringing in these certificates I'm assuming they're buying on the internet. So you mentioned, and I think it's important for our listeners that you restate, you know, exactly how they should ask that question And also, what do they do when they start to run up against a wall with the resident?
Okay, let me just first, I will make an offer here.
Okay.
I have a document that I prepared in 2016. I've had a lot of my attorney friends look at it. Let me just remind all of you that I'm not an attorney, and none of the things I'm talking about today is legal advice. I am a self-employed consultant, and my opinion is what I'm sharing
sure.
with you today. It is a learned opinion and a studied opinion, and I study it every day. I live, eat, and breathe fair housing, but it's not legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the document that I prepared, and I have sent it to hundreds of people, and then they send it back, and this is how we edit it. We want you to see what our boss did, it whatever. But it is a document, two pages. One goes to the prospect or the resident explaining why we need this and what we're doing, and then we get from them their health care provider, third party, and we send the other document to them that says we need your signature stating that this is in fact. And I am happy to share that. And we can give them my email address,
sure.
and I can fire them off to people. And just remember, you don't just when a property gets it, don't just start using it. You got to go through your company and make sure it's what they want to do and that it's properly edited or fits your. But not legal advice.
Right.
So,
right.
So now I'm rambling. So what was
so basically, what does it say? What do you advise people?
All right. So this is what I would send to the medical person. Notice to health services, third-party medical professional. Fred Smith at Happy Hills Apartments is requesting permission to have a service companion assessed. Here's the type, breed, the name of it. If it's Max, 150-pound German Shepherd. We're asking if the animal is a service animal required because of a disability, and two, what work or tasks it provides to the person. Please provide the information to us. We're not asking the nature or the severity of the disability. Do not tell us that. Your response can be provided on your letterhead or the bottom of this letter, and here's what they'll be signing. I've assisted or informed in the health care of Fred Smith. This person meets the definition of a person with a disability, and it gives the Fair Housing Act. Yes or no, and because of this disability, they need the above-referenced animal to live with them in our apartment committee. This is the clincher. My signature certifies that I have knowledge of or have provided care for this person, and in the unlikely event I would be asked to do so, I am willing to testify in a court of law to the above representations. You'd be surprised how many people who their doctor is their golfing buddy that was about to give them a fake, yes, you need this animal because your toe hurts,
mm-hmm.
and then they see this, they go, nope, not signing it if I'm going to have to go to court over it.
Yeah.
So, and I have the cover document, which goes to the resident. It says, if you have a disability that's not visible or we don't understand the necessity, we're asking for health services, medical provider, et cetera, et cetera. California, now, so here we go with your states again.
Mm-hmm.
California allows the document from your Pilates instructor and from Weight Watchers, as well as from other health services provider. HUD is starting to help us tighten up a little bit and say that you need to have a current health care relationship with the person who's signing the document.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about, you had mentioned in the title of the topic, as you put it, pot.
it's because it starts with a P.
Yeah, I understand that. but obviously that's with the laws changing from state to state, you know, it's become something that the multifamily industry has to deal with. So let's talk about that.
So we have 11 or 12 states now where marijuana is legal, both medically and recreationally. Of course, it started on the West Coast,
mm-hmm.
Our most liberal states typically. Illinois just jumped in on this one, too, in the last few months. And we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, about 16 or so who are allowing medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the holdouts. Those are the what I call the gray states. And Texas is one of them where no marijuana has been legalized. Texas does allow medical marijuana for a person with epilepsy. and that's it. But they still maintain that we're it's not legal here, and it is an issue for a lot of reasons, because the federal government says very clearly it is a class one drug in the same category with heroin, and therefore it is illegal per the federal government. But I remind everyone, when it was illegal for the persons of the same gender to get married in America, and then New York said you can do it here, and then New Mexico said you can do it here, and then more states kept jumping in and saying, what do we care? You marry who you love. And the feds gave in. I mean, they basically just gave in on it and said that if all the states are going to allow it, then we just as well shut up and allow making it legal for people of the same gender to marry. I try not to predict the future because it got me in trouble in my last lifetime, but I think that in time, at least medically, I think the feds will finally give in on it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a personal opinion about it. I've never smoked or used marijuana. But I remind everybody that 200 plus years ago in this nation, we had nothing but plants and herbs for healing. It was the only medicine we had. And my sisters live in California. All three of them have used some kind of salves and creams because of arthritis or some other thing, and it works for them. So I'm not saying that I'm advocating people staying stoned all the time. I am concerned about it with people driving. But here's one of our biggest issues, just for your listeners' benefit. It's the smell.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, if you work, own, or operate government-assisted properties, which means the feds have money in your property, a year ago, July, they said you have to go completely 100% non-smoking on a federally assisted property. And they've been through heck trying to get it enforced. You know, senior citizens that have smoked all their lives, kids that are smoking here, there, and whatever, and the smells come through to other people's apartments. We've dealt with this since the age of the caveman. You know, you're cooking with curry, and I smell it in my cave. And as long as we're stacking people and putting people in apartment communities, we're going to smell other people's food and cigarette smoke. And, you know, I'd love to see it go away. I'm not advocating. I'm not a smoker. I'm actually allergic to it myself. It makes my throat sore. So how we control this is still a dilemma. You can have a non-smoking policy on your property, and you need to have it in writing, and you need to enforce it, and good luck with it. And you can apply that to the smell of cigarette smoke as well. But it depends on what state you're in as to whether you call the police.
Right.
So in some of the states, you're allowed to grow it. You can have like six plants up to 12 inches high, yada, for personal use, yada, yada, yada. And in some states, if the service tech goes in the apartment and sees one little marijuana bush sitting in the window, and they report it to the office, and I'll tell you what happens. The office calls the police, and the police say, when you get a big problem, call us back. We're busy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of very nonchalant about it, but it's still, and then you turn around and you know, the feds say, if you know someone is committing a crime and you don't report it and you don't take action, you could be considered party to the crime. So you talk about a rock and a hard place and the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is a hot topic. So the smell is a big issue, and that's how it gives it away. And then we go talk to the person, and they go, no, it's not me. And the other neighbor says, yes, it is. I saw them. And it's just, I hope somebody finds a solution and tells me what it is. I have one client who had enough land on his property that he went back out past the swimming pool and built a nice wood gazebo with benches along the sides, and he put a sign up, and it's called the Butt Hut. And if people want to smoke, they can go out there and smoke. My apologies to smokers. It's a great time to quit. It's bad for your health, and it sure is hard to find a place to live.
Right.
You always laugh and tell somebody, I don't understand why we call it apartments when they're not apart. They're all stuck together.
Right.
And that's part of our issue.
Exactly.
That's the noise complaints, the odor complaints, the smoking complaints. that this, you know, the challenge. So you got to know in your own state. And now I'm just going to take an opposite tack that I did with the animals, that if your state says it's legal and you're not government assisted, and so people are using and eating and smoking or whatever. And by the way, don't tell people I'll give you a brownie recipe so you can eat it and not smoke it, because we're not their physicians. Don't be prescribing brownies, okay? But if your state says it's legal and the feds say it's not, I went through this just in Las Vegas last year. A man standing on the back row of the seminar stood up and said, I'm going to do what the federal government tells me, and I don't care what the state of Nevada says. I'm not letting people use marijuana on my property. And I said, I'll see you at break. And I said to him, now this is what you have to deal with then. If you say, if you get a complaint filed against you for not allowing people to use in this state where it's legal, and you go to court and you have a Nevada judge, do you think they're going to say, I take your side? They're going to say, this is my state, it's legal in my state, and you have to let this person use the marijuana, even if the feds say it's illegal. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the biggest challenges and the most questions that I get today.
Well, we've got about a minute left. Tell me a little bit about how people can get in touch with you, so that if they want to get more information or they want to get the letters that you mentioned, they can do that.
Okay. My email address is ANNE@ASKY.com and at AnnSadowski.com. I can assure you, if you Google the name, you will find me and how to spell it, and you will be able to reach me. My office number is 972-661-9300. I would prefer that you email me, Ann@AnnSadowski.com, rather than call me, because I'm not always right here to take all the calls, but I can certainly answer your emails and send you anything that you would like.
That's wonderful, Ann. Thank you so much. And
you bet.
And I know you're available for consulting if somebody is interested in that. And by the way, if for some reason you can't find Ann, reach out to us at the multifamilyradio.com website, and we will put you in touch with her. So,
great.
Ann, thank you so much. We will be back next Friday at the same time right here on this station with another great episode of Multifamily Matters. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.